What is peace brain? Peace brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is Dr. Gail Lash, your host, and we're very happy to have you here today. Today we have an exciting show because we are meeting with Michael Barrett, and he is a certified master facilitator, and we're going to talk about the topic of facilitating a more peaceful world. Wow, that we need to do, and he has some great stories to share with all of us. So I really look forward to that. And of course, as always, please stay tuned all the way through the show to the very end, where we have our Peace Brain meditation and really a transformative time for you to integrate all that we're talking about today into the meditation. And as always, I open with a quote. So today, we have a quote from Chief Seattle from 1855. And Chief Seattle says, "Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things connect." I love this quote because it really is what the Peace Brain Show is about, and it's what I believe as well, that we are all connected to each other. And whenever one person does something, like that butterfly effect we've heard about, when a butterfly flaps its wings on one side of the world, it is actually affecting the energy and the flow on the other side of the world. So this quote really does say we're all connected and we must work together in this world, that we need to share and be in collaboration, cooperation with each other. But how do we get there? How do we really do this in our world today? It seems so separate, so much putting people and things into boxes, and that we have almost everyone in the other, quote-unquote, category. So how do we get there into this unity and cooperation? Well, facilitation is one way to get there. And facilitation is what we're going to be talking about today on the Peace Brain Show. Facilitation of dialogue, of conversations, of goal setting, for businesses and for relationships, for groups, for organizations. Facilitation works in all avenues of life. So we are going forth to visualize this new world, and I want you to put on your facilitation hats as we talk with our guest today, Michael Barrett, who is a certified master facilitator. His company is Resonance LLC. He's located in Atlanta, Georgia. And for the past 10 years, the focus of his career has included facilitating high-stakes workshops to over 50 clients, teaching facilitation to hundreds of people from Atlanta to Australia, and providing coaching to a variety of other facilitators. Michael is also one of the 30 master facilitators in the world. Wow, that's amazing. He is a board member and a sponsor of the Southeast Association of Facilitators, and that's SEAF.org. He's a member of the International Association of Facilitators and a member and sponsor of the International Institute of Facilitation. Michael's website is resonancefacilitation.com. That's resonancefacilitation.com, resonancefacilitation.com. And you can get a hold at Michael at resonancefacilitation.com. In addition to facilitation, Michael is also a licensed massage therapist and an avid photographer and a fledgling jazz piano player. Welcome, Michael, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you, Gail. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
I'm really happy to have you on. Facilitation, oh my gosh, it can solve a lot of problems, can't it?
It really can. This has been my life's focus for the last 10 years or so. And I'll say, as I was thinking about this conversation today and trying to think about how I could add value to your show and your listeners, I realized, I've become more and more distressed at how, as a culture, we seem to be getting more polarized and more isolated in our own worldviews. It seems like we're less interested in hearing kind of divergent points of view. I've also become more aware that the work that I do in facilitation, this practice of facilitation can really be a tool to bridge these deepening divides. And I look forward to chatting with you and your listeners today about that.
And that's so important, to bridge that divide, because you're right. We tend to get sort of, I want to say hung up, but we tend to polarize ourselves, to put ourselves in our own focal group, in our own niche, if you will, and don't go out there and experiment and see what's out there and see how other people are thinking and what's happening. And so sometimes think that, my way or the highway type of running, of our corporations and our businesses and our lives. So tell us a little bit about facilitation, and you were talking something earlier about echo chambers. What is the effect of the echo chamber?
Yeah, well, I think back on when I was a kid. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s now, just to date myself a little bit. And when I was growing up, I mean, they were the big three networks, right? I mean, everybody listened to Walter Cronkite and got the news from the same source, and it was fairly middle of the road. And so folks had a chance to take that information that Walter and his contemporaries would share and then talk about it. And I realized, as I've looked at, kind of the broader culture that we're in, that it's so easy anymore to spend our lives listening to people, getting our news and sharing our viewpoints with people who have the same point of view that we do. And, I've heard it called echo chambers in the popular press, and I've begun to realize that, that's really, I think, having a pretty profound impact on how people think and what they talk about. Right? And I mean, because, like I said, you can, no matter what point of view one is in any point of discussion, whether it's politics or social issues, I mean, it's so easy to just get consumed and listening to nobody but those who think about life like we do. And then I think about social media, and I sound like an old curmudgeon. That's not my point. But social media, I think, gives us an opportunity to sit on the sidelines, often through anonymous screen names, and just lob little hand grenades into the conversation without much accountability, right? But just, and I think in a lot of ways, I think social media, actually makes us less social because lost the accountability, right? We've lost the accountability for owning our decisions and having a discussion about them, not only about why we think that opinion is important, but also listening to other people, right, and divergent points of view. And I really think, as I look at the world today, that I think in a lot of ways we may have lost or are losing, the opportunity for real dialogue. And as a result, it seems to me, whether I watch the news or have discussions with friends at parties, it seems like positions are hardening, on the big issues of the day. And to me, that's a loss. I mean, that's a loss for our society. It's also a loss for individuals. As I think about this work of facilitation, at its most basic, I really believe what meeting facilitation is all about is bringing people together with divergent points of view and creating an environment where we can have important discussions about important issues in productive ways.
Yes, and I want to go back for a moment to the social media and to the echo chamber, because I hear you that what we're what we're hearing is the same message over and over and over. And you mentioned that on social media, you know, lobbing the hand grenades anonymously, basically. So really what I hear you saying is we need to take responsibility for what we say, number one, and be able to put our name, if you will, to it, and that we need to hear what other people are saying and to really comment thoughtfully, you know, and with consideration to what they're saying, because it's not about just putting these one-liners out there or these, or sort of the standard message of what everyone else may be saying, but really stopping and thinking and saying, hey, wait, how do I really feel about that? And let me have a thoughtful conversation with that person, whether it be social media or over the phone or in person. And yep. Particularly, obviously, that's what facilitation is doing. It's bringing people together to where they can have those thoughtful conversations, correct?
That's exactly right. I think back on my wife and I have been married 10 years now, and I remember the preamble to the first argument we had when we were dating. And it was my wife is a very wise person, actually. She's a wonderful person. And I remember the preamble. She said, Michael, I'd like you to consider the possibility that this may be true. And then she shared her thoughts with me. And you know, in that comment, I think is real wisdom, right? That instead of coming into discussions kind of hardened for battle, if people would consider the possibility that another point of view might be true, in my mind, that just opens up so many possibilities. Because, I mean, how in the world are we to grow as individuals if we don't consider different points of view? I mean, yeah. You know, to me, once I've figured out all the answers, I mean, I'm done. I mean, where do I go from there? Right? I just ossify into this place where my positions get harder and harder. But, I mean, to me, considering the possibility that other points of view might be true is the way for me as a person, and really as for us as, you know, as teams, as groups, as society, to continue to evolve.
So when you say that, yes, your wife is very wise. So she can, she added that phrase to her as a preamble to her statement. But when you say that, what flashes into my mind is what? Give up loss of control that my way is right. So it requires people to really, any of us, to take a pause, if you will, and to say, well, maybe my way is not the only way that this needs to, could be done. Let me, as you said, consider the possibilities that this is true or this is a correct way or could be a way to do something. So how does that work when you go into an organization, a company, and there are, you know, the boss has one way, let's say, and the coworker, the managers have another way that they want to do something, and of course then the workers all go, well, gee, we know what's best. We're down here in the trenches actually doing it, so we know that our way is the best way. How do you get all of those people on the same page?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm often brought in by leaders, and whether it's in businesses or nonprofits or whatever the case, any organization, I find that the only reason people bring in folks like me as a facilitator is when there are divergent points of view, right? I mean, if everybody was already on the same page, they wouldn't need the services of a facilitator. They would just agree and get on with it. And what I find is that when I'm introduced to a session, it's because there are divergent points of view. And one of the things that I find is really fundamental to me is to create an environment where those divergent points of view can be shared and respected. And there are several tips and techniques that I use as a facilitator to really begin to create that environment where people are able to really kind of let their guard down, right? I mean, it's really, I think, in its fundamental way, I've got to create an environment of safety, because mm-hmm. if people don't feel safe to share their points of view and more importantly, to consider other points of view, they're not going to do it, right? They'll harden
exactly.
themselves behind their wall of potential pedantic beliefs, and it's like, fire away, you're not going to get through. And to me, that can be a symptom of an environment that's not safe to share and to consider.
So that brings up several things. Yes, safety, I was thinking trust. You have to get people to trust each other, and basically that is safety of what you're talking about. But then how do you have one person not sort of take over the whole, well, I mean, obviously a facilitator would, I guess, cut someone short if they were going to take over the whole meeting. But let's say the boss has, you know, the boss reigns. So how do you get the leader, the company leader, to not just put forth their views and be able to capture all the views from everyone else in a safe manner?
Yeah, that's another great question. I mean, typically when I'm working on a workshop, I will spend some time with the boss, the leader, or whomever, and basically ask one question to start this. It's like, look, are you interested in creating a dialogue? Because, I mean, if you're not, if it's a my way or the highway, then just send a letter, send a memo, send a proclamation, and get on with it. Right, mm-hmm. And invariably, what I try to get them to recognize is if they're bringing folks together, it's usually to create a dialogue, to get input. And so kind of getting them to recognize that the purpose of bringing folks together in a dialogue isn't, to have a my way or the highway discussion is a really helpful first step mm-hmm. to that, and just get them to realize that. And then, you know, what I'll do is I'll spend some time really trying to establish some ground rules to create an environment of mutual respect. I mean, there are several that I use depending on the dynamics of the situation. You know, for instance, I mean, if there are, if I'm walking into an environment where I know that folks are maybe going to be less than cordial, if I sense that there's an environment where they're out to get somebody, if there's a passive aggressive issue, or they're just out gunning for an individual, one of the ground rules I might have is let's focus on the issues, not the individuals, right? As just a way to establish that let's depersonalize this a little bit. Some other ground rules I've used that I found to be pretty helpful in conversations is something very simple. One conversation at a time. I actually call it Grandma's Rule when I put this in there. I had an opportunity to live with my grandmother when I was a kid. Now, I'll say when I was 13, living with my grandmother was not too cool. But now that I'm 55, I realize it was a real gift, to have spent time with somebody like that. And she used to say in her kind of, old school way, she said, Michael, if somebody's talking and you talk on top of them, that's just plain rude. So I don't use that but I do, one conversation at a time to create just the basic framework of respect. Because, I mean, I think, again, I'm a CNN junkie. I mean, how many times do you watch CNN or any of the shows and the guests just talk over each other, right? I mean, it's just such a sign of disrespect, and it demeans the topic. It demeans the other person. So, basic ground rules like that, I think, can be helpful. One of the other things I do, Gail, that I found really helpful in workshops is to define what consensus means. And, I find a lot of people come into conversations where there are strongly held opinions, and they believe, again, kind of the my way or the highway approach, right? And it's like they come in thinking, like, if we don't agree to what I specifically think is truth, then I can't buy in. And, right. and what I define consensus to be is can you live with it and will you support it after the meeting? And I suggest that might be a more useful definition of consensus than my way or the highway.
I like that.
Through those kinds of ground rules, I find, being intentional about setting the foundation of the conversation before the conversation can go a long way toward getting people into the right frame of mind to say, all right, well, maybe we can have a discussion about issues in a way that's not going to be a personal attack, where I'm not going to be railroaded, right, and where people might begin to at least consider other points of view.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the talking stick with the Native American
yes.
councils, where you pass the stick around and whoever has the stick is allowed to speak. Yeah,
yes.
Excellent. So I know you have some stories that you'd like to share with us. What are some examples of facilitation that you've actually done yourself?
Yeah, there are several, but let me share one or two that really strike me as an example of you know, the topic of the day, right? Facilitating a more peaceful world.
Mm-hmm.
So I several years ago, I worked with a local grocery co-op here in Atlanta, who will remain nameless, but they were in existence for about 40 years. And one of the things I learned in working with this organization is that these member owners care very, very deeply about this organization. I mean, I was really blown away by, I mean, you know, as an outsider, I was like, this is a grocery store. And to them, this was huge. This was part of their identity, right? And they had gone through a very acrimonious period. I mean, they had had contested board elections. There were lawsuits. Literally, there were lawsuits that were going back and forth. And they were actually at risk of folding after 40 years in existence because of a lack of a governance structure. I mean, they had gotten into so much acrimony that they had failed to field a board of directors, and their bylaws said if they didn't have a certain number of board members, they needed to fold. And so that's when they asked me to come on board to facilitate a member meeting of about 50 people. Now, I will tell you, this took a lot of planning, very intentional planning and structure. I had heard, you know, a rumor that during the course of the meeting, they were planning to have a coup d'etat and actually kick the board president off in the middle of this meeting. It's like, oh, boy, this is great.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, as a result of that, you know, I structured the meeting in such a way with some of the ground rules we've talked about and, you know, and just really trying to be intentional about how to structure the discussion, being very clear about what the focus of the meeting was. Well, at the end of the day, I mean, they were able to have a productive meeting focused on the most important issues and not get sidetracked by the issues that were derailing them in, you know, all the meetings before. And it was really interesting, Gail. At the end, one of the members came up to me, and she literally had tears in her eyes. And she said, Michael, thank you so much. I mean, we were so fractured. I wasn't sure we were going to be able to survive. You know, she said, I was afraid we'd lost the ability to find common ground, but today we found it. And she thanked me, but I told her, I said, you know, thank you, and this was not me. This was you and the rest of the folks in the room, right? I mean, all I did was create an environment where you all could have a dialogue. But I wasn't the one that had that dialogue. You did. And it was really intriguing because, you know, it was nice to get the accolades, but truthfully, in my mind, it was more important for her to realize that, you know, the art of facilitation is not about riding in on the white horse and saving the day. It's about creating that environment so that the individuals who have the vested interest in whatever is being discussed can have a productive dialogue. And it was so profound to me that, you know, it was always there. They always had it in them. They just were getting in their own way. And, mm-hmm. you know, through some techniques and tips of facilitation, I mean, we were able to clear out that noise and give them a chance to really get refocused on the things that were most important to them. I mean, you know, it was interesting. It was at the time of the Deepwater Horizon. Remember, you know, the oil well, right, that pumped out all that mm-hmm. stuff into the Gulf. And I actually used that as an example to them. I said, look, you know, this is going on in the news, and let's be clear. You've got your own burning platform right here, right? I mean, this oil well of this organization might, in fact, burn to the ground unless you all decide you want to do something different. You know, it was interesting is in my research around that, I did some research on oil wells and the men and women who, you know, are on that. And I learned that they have training every couple of weeks, safety training. You can imagine, right? I mean, they're out in the North Sea or whatever. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned is that, I mean, like every couple of weeks they have training. And one of the fundamental issues of the training is never, ever leave the platform. right? I mean, they're 10, 12 stories up from the water, you know, in the North Sea, the water's frigid. I mean, basically, it's like you mm-hmm. jump off the oil rig and you die, right? I mean, that's the training. Don't ever leave. And in, you know, in the parable, if you will, of the burning platform, or the reality of the burning platform mm-hmm. that was in the news at the time, was that the folks that survived jumped off platform.
Wow.
And I said to these folks in this, the 50 people or so that were in this member meeting, I said, in that example, the only people that survived went, they acted in ways that were counter to everything they had been told, to everything they believed, because that was the only way they were going to survive. And I said to them, I'd like you to at least riff it on what my wife said, right? I'd like you to consider the possibility that maybe the way for your survival as an organization is to do something counter to the things you hold most dear. Consider the possibility that you may, in fact, need to do something different. And I think that may have opened them up.
Mm-hmm. What a great analogy. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I'm feeling inspired just listening to it. It really is, obviously in that particular case, with an organization that's been around for 40 years or more, and all of us getting into these habits and routines to think about doing something completely different, I mean completely, not just a little bit, but completely different, is definitely a new paradigm. It's a new way of thinking. So you mentioned there are ways to set that respect and trust in the room, and you mentioned facilitation tips, and I know you have more stories to share, but I'd like for you to go into a couple of facilitation techniques that you did perhaps use in that grocery store example, or that you would use in a situation like that.
Yep. Well, you know, I talked about a couple already in the ground rules, and I find, you know, things like focus on issues, not individuals. I use that as a specific ground rule. Something mm-hmm. else I use a lot in the work I do is I tee up a parking lot, and I know a lot of people that facilitate meetings often use a parking lot, but I basically, at the front of a meeting, I suggest it, and I put a piece of paper on the wall, and I say, here's a parking lot, and it's for topics that are either off topic or out of time, right? And as a facilitator, I never tell people that we're going to put things on a parking lot, but I ask them if we should put them on a parking lot. And I promise them, I said, look, if something winds up on a parking lot, I promise you we're going to address it, right, before the end of the meeting. Because I have found that if you don't, that can be a place where good ideas go to die, right? I mean, and you're only going to use that tool once, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody feels very strongly about something and they like, well, can we put that on the parking lot? If they agree and then it just goes away, they're not going to let you use it again. But as yep. I mentioned in that meeting, you know, one of the undercurrents of this was that they wanted to have a coup of the board president during this thing, and sure enough, there was somebody stood up and they said, hey, you know, I know we're talking about this topic around maintaining the board, and I want to talk about the board president, and I think we need to get rid of him. And so I basically, since I had teed up the parking lot on the front end, I asked the person, I didn't tell him, I asked him, knew it was coming, but I asked him, it's like, well, help me understand, is this on focus with the purpose that we've talked about? And they said, well, maybe not exactly. I said, may we put this in a parking lot? And I said, I promise you we'll come back to this. And they let me put this on the parking lot.
Wow.
And then we came back at the end. When they let me, you know, at the end, I promised them that we'd come back to it. And it basically what we were able to do was to take that topic off of the mainstream, because that was going to derail this entire mm-hmm. discussion. I mean, it was clear. And we were able to address it in context to say, all right, so now there's clearly a concern about this person in this role. Can we identify another date and time to have a meeting focused on that specifically? And they agreed, and we did. And as a result of that, we were able to take all of that negative energy that truly would have taken this meeting, this very important meeting. I mean, literally, this was, they were going to come to agreement or lose their governance structure, we're able to keep our focus on the issue of the day and not discount the concern they had around this board president, but to channel it in a productive way. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was a really, really effective example of using tools like that, being intentional about using tools like that to manage the flow so that they don't get derailed. Because, you know, I really think, in my mind, you know, good facilitators will really plan in advance the structure and flow of a meeting and let the conversation go where it needs to go, but never, ever just let it go off into the weeds of a discussion that is not germane to the topic at hand.
And to me, that's where, you know,
As I think about meetings and also, again, go back to society at large, watch any news broadcast. I mean, how many times does the question get diverted into a topic that is tangential at best, and suddenly they're talking about something that is not at all germane to the flow or the focus?
Exactly. I do not want to get into politics here, but it does. I just want to mention that it seems when I listen to politicians of any, any group, that's an art. That's a very artful skill to take, to be asked a question and to be able to divert it to a tangential topic. It seems to be part of the process, and that's unfortunate because then we don't get to hear what the real messages are. Yeah.
Well, so one thing, you're right. It's an art, and I see it. And I also think it's an art. I also think it's an art to gently, artfully pull it back onto topic.
Yes, exactly.
And to me, you know, to do that in a way that doesn't throw anybody under the bus, right? And respects the individual and respects the group. But fundamentally, to me, you know, when I'm in those situations and I've got somebody trying to pull us off into the, the inflammatory topic du jour, my center is I'm trying to do justice to the topic and to the group, right? And when I center myself on that, I find I'm able to bend the arc of the conversation back to what the group is interested in discussing, why they're there. I mean, the purpose of the discussion.
Exactly. So how do you get... how do you get everyone in the room to actually be in the room? That's one question. But also you mentioned that it takes you some time, or any good facilitator time, to prepare for a meeting. How much time does it usually take? And then again, like I said, how do you make sure everyone sort of shows up in the room?
Yep. When I teach facilitation as well as do it, and that's one of the questions I get a lot. And I'll tell you that as a general rubric, it's not at all unusual for me to spend 2 to sometimes 3 times as much time planning a meeting as actually being in the meeting, right? So, I mean, if there's a day-long meeting, it could be 2 or 3 days of planning. A lot of people don't have that time, right? I mean, if you've got a day job and you're just running a meeting, it's one of the reasons that I think, people hire professional facilitators, because that is our day job, right? To put that kind of planning in. But it's that kind of upfront planning is, it's involved in thinking about the flow, it's talking to participants, it's establishing and creating the kind of foundation of information so that when we get into a discussion, everybody's on the same page, right? So that those that are new to an organization aren't discriminated against, or those that don't, that have the loudest voice don't necessarily sway the room. I mean, those are the kinds of things that I think really can make for a productive discussion. And, they just don't just happen. I mean, it really does. It takes, as I've been doing this now for a decade, I've realized more and more it takes a lot of time and a lot of intention to create that environment where people, whether they are loud or soft, whether they are new to the organization or 30 years in, all have kind of a similar voice in the discussion. Yeah.
And I know you have at least one more story to share with us. Go ahead and do that. I'd like to hear another story on what you've accomplished.
Well, there's the superintendent of public schools down in Savannah, Chatham County, Dr. Thomas Lockamy, is one of the most inspirational and aspirational leaders I've ever known. And I had an opportunity several years ago to work with him. Every month he would have what he called passionate topics. He would bring 30 to 50 people from the community into a forum. And these were, his staff, people from the schools, students, people from the business communities, people from the faith-based communities, students. I mean, it was just a wide, diverse group of people. And he would intentionally discuss very provocative topics of real importance to the community. I mean, we're talking about things like, we had topics like, why are young black men disproportionately disciplined in the school system, right? Why is teacher morale so low? The third rail discussion, of any superintendent is redistricting. In fact, he told me, he said, Michael, I've seen more of my peers lose their job over redistricting than any other topic, than all of the topics combined. And so we, in fact, one month were talking about redistricting. And I remember we had a group of about 35 people in the room. They were invited guests, right? This was by invitation. And we had 8 or 10 people literally storm the door. I mean, they broke in and the leader of this group grabbed the microphone. And I was facilitating, so he wagged his finger at me. And he said, I demand to be heard. You all are talking about closing my granddaughter's school so you can open up one of those for those rich people out on the island. And he said, this isn't right. Everyone has a right to an education. And I don't believe, what you're doing to my granddaughter is not right. And now you can imagine. I mean, I wasn't expecting this, nor was anybody in the room, right? And so the superintendent...
But the gentleman had a point, yeah.
And he had a point, and literally he was pointing his finger at me. And so I remember that the superintendent assistant gave me this look like, what are we going to do? And so I thanked him and his group for their interest, and I said, I would love to have you in this discussion. But I said, I have one ground rule. For you. I said, I want you all to spread out and sit. We had about 8 or 10 tables in the room. I said, I want you all to spread out and sit. And he said, no, we want to be together. And I said, sir, I appreciate your desire, but one of the ground rules of this forum around these passionate topics is that we have a cross-section of conversation. I said, we have been very intentional about creating table teams where we've got a diverse group of people, and I would love to have you join us. But that's the one rule. If you're willing to do that, we're willing to have you in the conversation. And so they agreed, and over the next 2 or 3 hours, basically what the topic of the day was give us by table the top 3 considerations for the superintendent and his staff to consider around redistricting. And so we had the conversation, and life kind of went on as we had planned it. And it was funny because as we did the readout, at the end, he grabbed the microphone again. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my gosh, where's this going to go? Right. And he looked at me, and he said, when I came in this morning, I was angry. And I was convinced that this whole process was a sham. He said, now that I've spent the last 3 hours in this venue, I realize you all are really trying to do the right thing. And I'm leaving here a real supporter of this process and this administration.
Wow.
Now, Gail, that was 7 years ago. That was 7 years ago that happened. And it feels like it was last week, because, I mean, this kind of work, creates those kind of burning moments where I really do believe that facilitation can bring real change. It can change people's ideas. It can change their perception. It can take people who come in very polarized, right, very wed to their positions, and can open them up to possibilities, to give them a chance to consider the possibility that there are other points of view that are equally valid. And to me, it's what's been kind of the driving force of the work I do for the last 10 years.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful story, Michael. And it reminds me of what Peace Brain really is all about. It's about connecting your head and your heart, because we're connecting that passion, but we're also connecting the respect and the dignity of each person and putting it together with the solutions and the ideas that we each can come up with. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, you know, truly to that point, as you and I chatted a while ago about giving me an opportunity to be on your show, when I saw what you were all about with Peace Brain, I really was so excited about the chance to chat, because this thing of facilitation, a lot of people don't understand what it's all about, and I really do think it's a powerful tool. It really is. It's a powerful tool to kind of bring that kind of awareness and transformation to groups big and small.
So if one, I'm going to ask you two questions. I want to cover this one first.
Sure.
If one wants to become a professional facilitator, what sort of steps does one have to take? And the second question is, if one does not want to become a professional facilitator, but still wants to be able to create that environment that you're talking about in their everyday life, what would you suggest?
Yeah, well, if one wants to become a professional facilitator, I guess recognize that it is a field of study and a practice. And through the IAF and INTFAC, and there are several organizations where one can study and get credentialed in facilitation. But one certainly does not need the initials after one's name to do this work, right? I mean, it really doesn't. And I, you know, my wife and I, we practice this, you know, at home. I mean, anybody, I think, can put facilitation techniques into practice, right? I mean, I really think at its core, facilitation is about building bridges instead of driving wedges. And I think anyone with the intention of building bridges can create a forum where they can bring people together and really try to create an environment where different points of view can be shared and respected. And in my mind, if any of your listeners have got an interest in this, if this discussion has intrigued anyone listening at all, I'm just suggesting go forward and look for opportunities to do that, whether it's at work, whether it's in your homeowners association or your faith community or at the dinner table. I mean, if you can do this in a way where your intention is to create an environment where people can share different points of view instead of trying to, you know, push your own point of view. To me, that's the essence of this work.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, you hit on a couple of really hot areas, like a homeowners association and at the dinner table too. You're absolutely correct. I'm a Baha'i, which is a religion, and in the Baha'i faith, we have something called consultation, and it's not the normal, what we would think of consultation, but it's a technique, if you will, where people sit around a table, and you come with your own wisdom and your own ideas and your own points of view, but you basically each person puts their ideas into the middle of the table. And you don't campaign for it. You basically put it in there so everyone has heard it, and then you step back and listen to everyone else. So it's justice in action, if you will, everyone coming in with an equal, with equality to be able to put forth their points of view. And then once all the wisdom is in the middle of the table, it's looked at and say, okay, what solutions can come from this? If there are solutions that arise, the group then talks about it and makes a decision. to support one solution or not, or if there's more facts that need to be gathered, then those are delegated to who's going to require those, you know, get those facts to put forth, and the meeting is adjourned and you come back with new facts. So it's once the decision is made, though, it's everyone gets behind it. It's, as you just said, can you live with it? your definition that you put forth of consensus a few minutes ago of, yep. You know, is this something that you can go forth with, and you go forward. So there's multiple techniques that are out there, and you're right, it is a whole field of study of facilitation. And oh my gosh, with the SEAF.org, the Southeast Facilitation group that is here in Atlanta, and well, for the whole southeastern part of the United States, is really amazing, because the tools and techniques that are shared, I'm always amazed at the meetings that we have, the workshops that we have, of just new ways that you can gather those, that group wisdom, and really have people share in a respectful manner.
Well, I appreciate you shouting out the SAF, because I am a board member and an avid supporter of that organization, and it has enriched me so much. We meet five times or so a year, and you know, the intention is just to bring people in and just share their thoughts, much like we've done today, around how can you bring different sets of tools and techniques and perspectives to the big issues of the day. And, you know, it, in my mind, it's a noble thing to do. It really is. It's a noble thing to do.
And you can have lots of fun doing it, actually. I know you put forth a couple of really kind of somber examples, but really these facilitation techniques can be uplifting, enlightening, fun, practical, camaraderie, you know, building. It's I'm really impressed by them all.
Yeah.
So we're getting toward the end of our show. Is there any last words of wisdom you have for our listeners, Michael?
Yeah, well, I guess just kind of going back to something we said earlier, I would just like to toss out to your listeners that, you know, this is a field of practice that doesn't need to be credentialed. You don't need to be an expert. It's mostly, I think, if you've got a desire and an intention to look for ways to build bridges. I mean, as I think about where we are right now in our society and how polarized people are, polarized discussions are, I would love it. I mean, if just a couple of your listeners take out of this discussion, they go, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for me to build a bridge, then I'd say please lean into that, because it's easier to do than you might imagine, and in the impact, I think, can be pretty profound. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. For you being, Michael Barrett, being on the Peace Brain Show today. And, gosh, we look forward more to hearing more stories at a later date.
I would love it.
So I just want to shout out again your website. It's resonancefacilitation.com, resonancefacilitation.com. And you can learn more about Michael there and his expertise as a master facilitator, a certified master facilitator. So thank you, Michael.
My pleasure, Gail. Thank you.
So now we're going to go into the Peace Brain meditation. So I invite you all just to take a breath. Kind of digest what you've heard today. And know that we can get to a place of cooperation and unity and collaboration and agreement and consensus where we can live with it and move forward. And so take a breath and know that that possibility is happening every day in the world, that this polarization, the separateness that we seem to hear in the media and out in the world is not necessarily the only truth, or is not maybe the truth at all. So again, take a breath and allow yourself to be in a space of freedom and ease, to feel the possibilities that are there, the possibilities of bridges being built. And in fact, I invite you to think of a situation that you may have had in your life or you may have now where bridges need to be built, where not everyone is getting along or agreeing with each other or understanding the other person's viewpoint. And just see it out in front of you as you take a breath. Visualize it in your mind's eye. And take a moment to really observe what is going on. Because as we each come to a situation, or we each come to some troubled point, each of us come with a different lens, with a different viewpoint, with our different experiences coming into play. And just like the gentleman who came in saying, "I don't want you to close down my granddaughter's school," it's because he loved his granddaughter. And he felt like she needed the education just like anyone else. He felt like he wasn't being heard. There was a sense of, perhaps, "I'm not worthy," or "she's not worthy," and you're not paying attention to her. Take the moment to observe what's really going on underneath, what people might be bringing to their words that is really coming from their heart. And realize that everyone needs to be listened to. And now I invite you to visualize a bridge being built, a bridge between every person in that situation, that each of them can step onto that bridge as a neutral territory, as a safe environment where they can be heard and they can speak from their heart without judgment, without censorship, without being shut down. And that as each step onto that bridge and are able to speak their truth, from not only their ideas and their wisdom and their experiences, but also from their heart, that others begin to listen and that they really begin to hear the truth, the nuances, the multifacets, the several solutions that could come from the group wisdom. Allow yourself as observer and as the neutral party in this instance, watching in your mind's eye, allow yourself to send love and affirmation to all involved in this issue, in this topic. And see that they do, that they can come up with new solutions, with new, better ways of doing this work together, of coming to a unity, a place of collaboration and cooperation, of finding the commonality, of shifting paradigms so they really can come to a focus and a point of agreement to move forward. Take a breath. And know that you can be that bridge builder. You can create that neutral and that safe environment for all to speak and to see and to hear and to feel each other. And feel the beauty of that. Feel the tension being released. Feel the laughter and the smiles begin to emerge. Feel the agreements and the solutions step forth. And take a breath. And I invite you to keep that in your mind and to send that energy of peace out to the situation and out to the world. And then to bring yourself back to your chair and to where you are. And to know that you are a bridge builder in every moment of every day. Thank you so much for tuning in today to the Peace Brain Show and to our guest, Michael Barrett, and to his resonancefacilitation.com. And know that you are a facilitator going forth in every moment. And if you'd like to know to learn more about the Peace Brain Show and our work, you can find me, Dr. Gail Lash, at tourismforpeace.com, or you can email me at hello@peacebrain.org. And now I invite you to please go forth and activate your Peace Brain and to put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Alchemy of Peace coaching sessions, her Peace Master plans for your business or organization, and her upcoming book, Peace Brain 101. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 2 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for the Peace Brain Show and your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.